everyone, and welcome to Old Geek, Young Geek, the only podcast on the internet where we talk about video games. I'm Scott Bell. With me, as always, is Steven Johnson.
That's right. Yes, I am with you, as always.
because how else will I do the show? Today we're going to talk about comedy in video games, since last week that was our promise to you, our loyal listeners.
And we're always keeping our promises.
Yes, we are. We are men of our word.
Yes, and except for when we lie.
Yes, that happened once.
Which is constantly. Yeah. Every word is lie. Also, for the first time ever, Old Geek, Young Geek is live on Periscope. If anybody wants to at least watch one half of a podcast being taped, you can do it on Periscope right now.
Awesome.
I don't really know how Periscope works, so this is a huge experiment.
All right, so we're doing it for science.
Yes, exactly.
So, before we get into the topic of comedy in video games and comedic video games, let's talk about the news.
Scott, right before the podcast dropped, for me, the most amazing news I've heard in a very, very long time, and I can't believe I am so out of the loop this week that I didn't even see it online anywhere. And that news is Fallout 4 has been announced and will be shown at the E3 this year.
Yeah, that small event called E3.
Yeah. A little gathering there.
Yeah. It's very, like, I kind of expected this, because this is the year that Bethesda, the creators of Fallout, or the current Fallout games, are going to be having their first press conference. So that's a pretty big deal, and I was thinking, they're going to announce Fallout 4. So they're going to announce it, and they already have, like, it's confirmed, and they're going to show, I think, like, an hour or two of the game behind closed doors.
I gotta get behind those closed doors, guys.
Just bust them in. Just kick them in.
I gotta get there. Talk to some. I gotta get there. Gotta get there.
All right, man. Well, get on it.
I'll try. I'll try. I've been out of the gaming for a little bit, so
yeah.
I don't know.
I'll
do what I can.
Yeah, I guess. What are your predictions, and what do you want to see from this new Fallout game?
I would like to see Fallout set in Los Angeles, because I love playing games that are set in Los Angeles.
Okay.
That's what I would like to see. I predict that I will be buying an Xbox One as soon as the game is released, because that's my window right there, is the Xbox One.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't even know, man. I don't even know. I predict really good things, though. Like, I think that they're going to take the newer systems and use them to the extent that it's possible to use a video game system to make something really, really cool, judging by the last couple Fallout games anyway, which I am a total fan of.
Okay. Do you think that they're going to bring back the hardcore mode from Fallout New Vegas? That game was made by Obsidian and not Bethesda.
Yeah, but the hardcore mode was pretty popular. I think they will bring that back. I mean, that seems like almost a no-brainer to do something like that.
Because
it doesn't cost anything to do that.
Right. Do you think that it's going to be more akin to Skyrim, in that, like, there are no classes and, like, how the dialogue system worked? Because that was the Fallout New Vegas and Fallout 3 played a lot more like Oblivion. And then, you know, Bethesda was working on Skyrim, and that brought a lot of major changes to the Elder Scrolls games. Do you think that they're going to do something similar with the Fallout games?
I don't know. I mean, Fallout has always, and especially Bethesda, is always sort of pushing the envelope of what you can do with RPGs. So
yeah,
I don't know, but whatever it is, whatever they bring out, I have no doubt that it's going to be awesome.
Great.
They're my favorites. I got to say, and that's my favorite game series. So
yeah.
You know, I'm like unabashedly fanboy. I've got only good things to say about Fallout. So
awesome, cool. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I enjoy the Fallout games as well. I'm not as avid a fan of the games as you are, but I certainly do enjoy them. They're really well made. I'm looking forward to it as well. It'll probably be something that I pick up, you know, because I do enjoy the Fallout games. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to that, and I'm really glad to hear that, you know, it's actually coming. So people have been waiting that for for that game for a while. So
there you go. I've been waiting for it since I finished Fallout 3.
Yeah.
By the way, there are two listeners in our Periscope. I will have you know, two listeners or viewers.
Woo!
All viewing right. The Periscope. I don't know where they came from. I don't know who they are, but I'm happy they're there.
Hello, listeners. I hope that you enjoy this podcast. So on to the next topic of news. A new study was released that video games can improve your cognitive ability.
Oh, I don't like Periscope.
Oh,
sorry.
Well.
I apologize. I'm going to stop obsessing over the Periscope. Yes, okay. Video games can improve your cognitive facilities. Is that what it is?
Yeah, something like that. And I don't care. No one cares about these studies. No one should care about these studies. Video games are art. And if you want them, if you want people to take video games seriously or at least consider them an art form, treat them as such. Do not say, oh, no, they're not a waste of time. They're improving my cognitive abilities. eat your freaking vegetables. Eat your fruit. Whatever. You know, do that to improve your actual health. Don't play video games to try and improve yourself. Improve yourself with video games by speculating them as art and taking from them what you can to apply to your real life. Situations, man. Like, there are more important things in video games than the ability for you to create strategies and analyze things quicker or, you know, notice things. No one cares. No one's gonna look at books and say, like, oh, if you read books, you could read faster. No one cares.
No well, one, books no improve one... your cognitive ability, I bet.
Sure, they do. They improve your imagination, and so do video games, because they have all these different vast worlds full of lore and people and all these different things, and like you analyze them in a certain way that like other people don't if you play games regularly. Sure, fantastic. But are they an art form? I would say so, and I have been saying so for a very long time. Do I care that they improve my ability to think faster? No, not at all. That's not what I care about. I care about the things that I can take away from them. Like, what is the value in, like, the party system in RPGs and how that kind of relates to, like, the circle of friends that I keep? Or let's talk about how, like, Zelda makes me afraid and, like, when I go into a dungeon, I'm scared, but when I come out, I become a better person because I face my fears. That's what we should be talking about in video games, not some freaking statistic that someone came up with. No one's going to look at that and say, ah, yes, a study was released that showed that video games improve your cognitive ability. I now appreciate video games better and think of them less as a waste of time. That's not going to happen ever. Screw
yeah.
this study. Screw
yeah,
science.
Scott. Yeah, science, man.
Suck it.
Yeah, suck it, science. We don't need you with all your rules, man.
We need art. We need.
I agree with you, though. Like, I agree. Video yeah. games don't have anything to apologize for, and people should stop trying to make them apologize and stop giving excuses of why they're playing video games. I mean, who
exactly.
cares? Do whatever you want
yeah.
to do. Stand on your head and smell daisies. I don't care what you do.
Right? I mean, like, do what you want and be proud of what you do. Like, be the best person that you want to be. And if you want to play video games, play video games. If you want to, you know, play sports, play sports. If you want to watch TV or whatever, like, do what makes you happy. And don't care that other people are, you know, criticizing you for it. I do want people to take video games seriously, but it's not for, like, the reasons of, like, oh, I'm ashamed to play video games. I'm trying to, like, preach the gospel of gaming and how there's actual real-world value to video games. People
right.
spend so much time with video games, and people say, oh, you didn't do anything today. The hell I didn't. If I spend all day in World of Warcraft, I was socializing with people. I was completing things. I feel like I improved myself in some way. And sometimes World of Warcraft can, you know, fall into the levels of addiction, and it has for a lot of people, and that's sad. And everything in moderation, people. Listen to that. But, like, you know, there's a lot more value to video games than people credit them for. Everyone, you know, that doesn't play video games will say that they're a waste of time. And that just infuriates me. And studies like this are not going to help.
They do take a lot of time, Scott.
They do take a lot of time.
It does take a lot of time.
They
like,
do.
You know, this is I'm going to come at it from the old geek point of view once again. And I got to say, you get older and you have more responsibilities and different responsibilities, and you realize,
yeah.
wow, man, playing a video game takes a lot of time.
I know. I just
it's a really
like
time-consuming hobby.
I just put 50 hours into Dragon Age. Like, that's two
wow.
entire days of my life Jeez. Into Dragon Age, but I love that game so much. But, you know, these statistics are not going to change anyone's mind.
I agree.
You know, they aren't going to help our cause of, like, you know, trying to improve the culture of video games. It's just going to make us, it's just going to make us say, well, video games improve your cognitive ability by 15% according to this study. No one's going to appreciate that. No one's going to care.
It's totally stupid. And no other form of mass entertainment do people feel the need to constantly apologize for and excuse.
Or defend.
And say, yeah, or defend. Yeah. Nobody goes, oh, well, you know, a study showed that people who go to the movies are more likely to be homeowners than people who don't.
Yeah.
Because nobody does that. It's stupid.
You know, you know what's a waste of time? Studies like these.
Yeah. Why aren't they studying something awesome?
Yeah. Like dinosaur recreation. I don't know.
Like dinosaur recreation and robot feelings.
Robot AI,
Why aren't they studying robot feelings more, Scott?
I don't know.
Robots have feelings? I don't know what I'm talking about, Scott.
No, you don't.
Let me tell you that. But let's go from robot feelings to my feelings about funny video games, because we said we... Man, that was the worst segue in all of broadcasting history.
I think that you should leave them. I think you should leave the segues to me, because I've been proven time and time again
you know
on the
what?
Show
Your
that
segues,
I'm pretty good at that.
You got me on segues. I gotta tell you.
Yeah. Well, let's just move on to our topic of the show.
Like a segue moves people from place to place.
without having them move their legs and they just have to lean forward. So yeah, let's talk about comedy and games.
Yes.
I sent you a... never mind. It's a very difficult thing to do in video games because comedy is heavily reliant upon comedy. What am I talking about?
Comedy is heavily reliant upon comedy, Scott. You're right.
I'm hearing some music. I'm not sure if it's coming from outside.
It could be from inside your mind.
Oh, it's my alarm. That's what it was. Whoops, we'll cut that out.
No, we won't.
Okay, fine. Ah, damn it. All right, so comedy is heavily reliant upon timing, and timing is all in the control of the player in fact, every video game. So when it comes to, like, comedy in video games and executing that, sometimes you have to have it in control, like in a cutscene or in some sort of, like, communication with the player, like someone's talking over the radio or something like that.
Right.
So comedic games, like, in a, like, straight up comedy, like, you know, Punchline and such, I think that I think of games like Ratchet and Clank. I think of games like Borderlands, specifically Borderlands 2, because that game was awesome.
Right.
Games by Double Fine, who made Psychonauts and Brutal Legend. Those are very funny and comedic games, and they have control over some of those elements of comedy, because, you know, the jokes take place, like, during the cutscenes and, like, over radio broadcast in Borderlands 2.
Right.
So, like, you get sort of those, you know, distilled, isolated jokes. And with games like Ratchet and Clank, the comedy is also in the gameplay, because of sometimes the guns and the weapons that you have are just hilariously awesome. Like the Sheepinator, or the, gun that shoots, saw blades. I mean, that's just cool. So, like, I think that, like, in video games, comedy can come in two forms: either the isolated and distilled jokes that happen in cutscenes and over, like, you know, communications that, you know, the player has no control over, or in examples of gameplay with something that the developers intentionally put in or unintentionally. Because games like Goat Simulator, Kerbal Space Program, Besiege, and Surgeon Simulator 2013 or 2014, those games are hilarious. But that's because they have really wonky physics and, like, gameplay that's so simple, and everything just kind of falls in, and it's hilarious and laughable just to watch everything just kind of fall apart. Yeah, comedy in games is difficult on Beacon, and a lot of games... or some games nowadays, like, try and illustrate that comedy with sort of how the gameplay works and the silly mechanics that they have. Games like Kerbal Space Program, Besiege, and Surgeon Simulator, those games are just, like, hours of laughter just because of how bad they are, in a sense.
Right.
Like, I think that games can be so bad that they're funny, and, like, they might do that, like, intentionally. And so games like that with their silly little physics, can actually produce lots of lots of comedy from that.
But you bring up a really good point though, because it's something I never thought about, the fact that if you look at what games are funny,
yeah,
the player is cast as the straight man in most games that are supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
For good reason, because people aren't very funny. So if you put a person as a straight man in a game, then the game can be funny. Like something like Portal is really funny. Like the character of GLaDOS is very funny, and so is the other characters. But it's all just recording, so
yeah.
You're not being funny. You're just doing the puzzles. But something like Goat Simulator or Octodad.
Oh, Octodad,
Octodad is great. Those two games cast the player as the comedic part, and the game itself is the straight man, which is kind of really interesting. Especially like Goat Simulator, where mm-hmm. the idea is like, oh, it's just this regular world where all these people are, but you're a goat. So you get to make the jokes. You don't just listen to the jokes, you make them. That's kind of crazy. I never thought of like how in some small way those games are kind of revolutionary.
Yeah, you know? Totally. And that's you know, comedy in games. And sometimes like a lot of games that even games that are like supposed to be like serious, like with stuff like glitches, like those are really funny. I mean, that stuff happens all the time and it's funny to watch. And so that's why like there's a lot of YouTube channels out there that do like Let's Plays or like just have like clips of games that glitch out, and like, these are supposed to be like super serious games, but like someone's leg will be above their head, or like they'll be like walking around in circles while trying to have a conversation with you, or like someone will be missing a face, and like these things are hilarious. It's really shameful to see like, oh man, they missed that hardcore, but like at the same time it's like this is a good experience and I am enjoying it.
Goat Simulator is the first game, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's the first game that openly and completely embraced the glitch and understood how it's funny. Because everything in Goat Simulator is a glitch, and it's super funny. Like, all the glitches are left in the game, and they're weird and awesome. And, like, I that game, as much as it's sort of a throwaway and kind of like a... I think, in some ways, will end up being sort of important in the history of video games, if anybody ever bothers recording the history of video games. I think that will be looked upon as sort of an innovative title in a way that will be capitalized upon in the future. Like that idea will be built upon in other games, and it's kind of cool. Goat Simulator, man.
Yeah, I agree. And kind of.
Have you played the Goat Simulator, Scott?
I haven't. No,
dude, it's hysterical. It's so funny. You got to play it with somebody else. I play it with Dexter, my son, and when we first downloaded it and first played it, we were hysterical. We were howling with laughter because we were being goats and like knocking over cars and licking things, and everything that happens is just completely crazy.
Yeah, you have
and it's for no reason at all. It's just the silliest, most fun game.
Yeah, you have a stretchy tongue and it grabs onto things.
Grabs onto things. Mm-hmm. And then like just like goats are funny in themselves.
Yeah.
Like goats are just funny animals.
They're weird.
And to watch a goat just destroying a town is incredibly funny and satisfying in a way that you wouldn't think it would be if you hadn't tried it. You know?
Yeah, totally. There's no objective of that game. You are just a goat with the ability to jump and stick your tongue to things. And
well, you know, there are missions in a sense.
In a sense, like you can unlock like different kinds of goats and different kinds of things to be. And I wouldn't call those like objectives. I think those might be like Easter eggs, I guess. But like
No, but there are stated objectives. There's like, you know, like ram into X number of people, say, or something like that.
Okay.
And then you get points for that or whatever. But you know, like I think we did a couple of them and then just kind of ignored that because like
it's fun.
It's more fun to just like wreck cars and wreck people and
And
find all the hidden stuff. That game is just Easter eggs. It's just like one big Easter egg.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny, like, intentionally, but like kind of unintentionally, because like there's no scripted comedy.
Right.
You know? And that's the thing. Because like you were saying with Portal, like GLaDOS is funny. GLaDOS is really funny. But you're just going through like scratching your head, like trying to solve all these amazing puzzles. But like in between,
you're not the person who's funny.
Yeah, you're not the joke. You're not the joke. Right. The game is, and so
same thing with something like GTA. Although the GTA series kind of walks a line between the two things, because you know a lot of the ancillary material is really funny, like the radio stations and stuff.
Yeah.
But also, if you want to just cause mayhem, that's kind of funny too.
It is.
So Like that's sort of between Goat Simulator and Portal is
is
the GTA series.
But with something like that, it's rather out of character. Because in, say, GTA 5, Franklin or Michael wouldn't do those sorts of things. It's just out of their character. Trevor, however, the third character, is a complete psychopath and probably would cause those
And would, yeah.
So it's, I don't know, it's interesting to me. It always bothers me when people, like, play a game that has, like, a very serious tone, such as Last of Us, and all they're doing is just, like, screwing around and doing random stuff.
Right.
And that's, I think, like, it's a disservice to the game and to the writers, you know, to just completely screw around with the characters and, you know, do stuff that's out of character just for a laugh when the setting is very serious.
And, right, but then there's something to be said for, it's cool that that people just have the opportunity to, like, not have to be reverent at all if they don't want to be. You know, I mean, like, I think that's funny sometimes, you know.
Depends Half-Life,
on the context.
In Half-Life 2, there's a lot of conversations that happen, but you can, like, be off in the other room and they'll still be, like, gabbing on. It's funny. I mean, that's kind of funny.
That's like one of the, another kind of Easter egg that I think everybody really likes is the conversations that continue after you leave that are funny.
Like, you'll just walking away and they'll be talking and the voice fades in the background and, like, well, whatever.
You know, now that I think about it, almost every video game has some comedic elements.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, are there any video games that you can think of off the top of your head that are just straight drama? There's no... Everything is taken seriously.
Because
I can't think of one off the top of my head. I mean, maybe, like... What about, like, the COD game? No, they have comedic elements, totally.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's not a game out there that won't have, like, a small joke or something that makes you snicker.
Right, but there's plenty of movies that don't have anything funny in them, and plenty of novels and plenty of everything that doesn't have anything funny in it.
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying, Last of Us is a very, like, dramatic game, but there's still some moments in there that are rather lighthearted, especially those moments with Ellie, you know. But
yeah, no, that's true. And then Ellie going around finding all the comic books that kind of stuff, you know.
Oh, Spec Ops The Line.
Spec Ops The Line, okay.
That game is, I don't know if you've played it, but it is.
Yeah, I know, I did. I played like half of it. I'm trying to think.
It's devastating.
Yeah, no, that's an awesome game. I like that game quite a lot.
Yeah. Like there's no lighthearted moments. There are a few, but they're not really like all that funny. You know?
Right.
And I don't think that they're meant to be. They're just kind of like, I don't know, it kind of starts off, you know, with the sarcastic guy making sarcastic comments sarcastically, but it really like evolves into this really dark story. And I love that game for that reason.
And there's really no place for, that's the kind of game that comedy would be sort of out of place within.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of comedy games, I actually did the homework that I said I was going to do last week. And I played a bunch of the South Park game.
Yeah.
Stick of Truth.
Yeah.
And it is, as predicted, it's actually really funny. I mean, but again, you're the straight man.
Yeah.
And the funny stuff happens around you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's legitimately funny, like an episode of South Park, which was kind of surprising when a video game purports to be funny and then is actually funny, because so many of them fail when they try to be funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because comedy's hard. But just, like, you can tell that it was that Matt Parker and Trey Stone wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it has every ounce of their hallmark.
Did it have like the same pacing as an episode?
No, I mean it necessarily, because it's a game, is much slower. I mean, I played it for a couple of hours and I just felt like I was kind of in the beginning of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's actually, I was kind of surprised in some ways. It's sort of slow paced in a way that I didn't think it would be.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of walking around, you know, and a lot of, and it sort of, for all the, even though it's a modern game, it sort of is throwback in a lot of ways, like throwback to older RPGs. I mean, it's turn-based combat instead of like real time. And it's because it's South Park, it's 2D. So, you know, you're walking through these 2D environments to the next 2D environment, basically, you know, but it's definitely worthwhile. Like it's super funny, especially if you like the South Park show. I mean, it's crazy funny.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked it.
Good.
Yeah. I again, it gets into where like it walks a really fine line between like a kind of humor that is not that I don't find very funny, you know, it gets very close to being mean.
Yeah.
And dismissive, and like one of the character classes is the Jew.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, all right, but given how much actual anti-Semitism there is in the actual world, yeah. It's like, yeah, maybe you should have a little responsibility. How much responsibility do comedians should comedians and comedic game makers have, Scott, do you think? Do they have any?
I think that they should have a little bit of restraint. There are a lot of times where comedians cross the line, and I'm not just saying for myself, but on like a larger scale. Like, there are some things that are just awful that people say, and then they can write it off as a joke. But that shouldn't,
right.
That doesn't excuse them. It really doesn't excuse them from making a terrible joke and saying something that just is uncalled for and just not funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that comedians and artists in general should have some kind of restraint. Because mm-hmm. they have their own lines, and they know that they're crossing them when they make jokes like that.
Right. Yeah, I'm kind of on the fence about this. I'll be honest with you, because, you know, some part of me is like, well, of course you shouldn't do crappy things to people. You know, of course you shouldn't, you know, say things that are mean about people that are, you know, of course you shouldn't punch downwards. You know what I mean? Like, you
yeah.
shouldn't say.
Yeah.
But then there's this other part of me that says, well, what are you going to police what people think and say? You know, like, what do you think that, like, there should be some... who's going to set the standard of what people can say, and like, why should anybody listen to a person who's trying to tell them what things they can and can't make jokes about? Like, what? So I'm totally on the fence about it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, especially as somebody who writes horror movies and is really into the horror movie thing, how many times have people tried to, and actually succeeded in, banning horror movies because the content was so harmful to people and it was so tasteless that you couldn't show it? And those are some of the things that I like the most in the world. So how can I be in favor of
censorship?
You know, yeah, like if Sam Raimi had said, well, you know what, I better have some responsibility to the audience and not put in all this gore.
Yeah.
It would have made The Evil Dead terrible. So,
and that's another thing that I was, you know, just considering, like, if people didn't get offended and if we all sort of abided by the same rules, we wouldn't make any sort of progress and we wouldn't be able to know where to draw those lines. So
that's true.
Yeah. There's
yeah,
some value
in it.
And then
there's like humor. There's like humor now, or there's topics now that you could never, that you couldn't joke about now. Like, it just wouldn't be funny to anybody. But 20 or 30 years ago, it would have been hilarious. Like, I was watching this YouTube video of a press conference during the Reagan administration, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was right after the AIDS epidemic started. It was at the beginning of the AIDS epidemic. And a reporter for one of the New York papers asked the press secretary, he said, you know, like, what is the Republican or the Reagan administration's response to all the deaths of these people in New York City? And the gathered press, like tittered, like it was funny, like it was a funny question.
Yeah.
And then the press secretary said something like, oh, well, we don't have anything to say about it. And the guy said, the reporter pressed him and said, so you don't have anything to say about the couple of hundred U.S. citizens who are dying of a mysterious disease? And everybody laughed more, and the press secretary said, no. And, you know, like, why are you so interested in this stuff, Dave? And everybody laughed like it was hysterically funny.
Yeah.
And like, watching it, it's just like mind blowing that there was a time that people could think there was something funny about that, and mm-hmm. not just some like weirdos in some like you know, reactionary group in the Deep South, but, you know, the mainstream press and the administration of the president were openly laughing about the fact that people were dying of a weird disease.
Yeah.
Just because the people were gay. And it's just the craziest thing that attitudes have changed so much. So you couldn't make those kind of jokes now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
Because they wouldn't be funny. Like, what would be funny about that? You know? Like, what is funny about implying that somebody's gay?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no humor once it's not a taboo subject. Like, now yeah. there's, like, now it's no big deal if somebody's gay or tells you that they're gay. So
yeah.
that's not a taboo subject, and it's not something that many people joke about. And if they do, then they don't get invited to any interesting places, and they don't have, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
like It's not socially acceptable to do that because it's not funny. It's not.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. I mean,
I wonder what it is that we're making jokes about today. What things are that is just like a normal thing? Because that Reagan administration thing would have nobody commented on it.
No.
Like it wasn't weird to anybody. No. What things are we doing now that people are going to look back on in 20 years and just go, what?
Yeah.
How can anybody have ever said that?
I really don't know, because like to us, it's normal.
You know, super producer Robin just handed me a note and she brings up a really good point. She says, chick jokes and rape. And she's totally right.
Yeah.
People are going to look back and say, my God, what was the matter with people that they would make light of something like that? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally.
Like people are going to look back on that and just, yeah. And people, rape jokes is starting to happen now, I would say.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah,
I mean, most people don't.
I don't know.
Most
like,
people don't make those kind of jokes. I don't know.
Not the people that I associate with. and yeah, like that stuff happens all the time. And like, there's people getting offended about everything all over the internet. Like it's
right.
And everyone has a voice now because of the internet. And
right.
You know, you just hear all about it all the time. And so yeah, there's definitely stuff that you know people say, oh, that's in poor taste, and it's happening just because like. The internet is anarchy. There are no rules.
Yeah.
There are no censorships. And government is trying to change that. But if they did, you know, it wouldn't. I don't know. The internet is a strange and beautiful place because, like, some amazing things can happen. And you can see some amazing things. Or, like, watch a video that really changes your perspective on things. Or you could see, like, the worst thing ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you could. You know, what is that comedian? Oh my God, his name is escaping me. He's like the funniest comedian in the entire world.
Louis C.K.
Chris Rock made an interesting point yesterday, or not yesterday, but recently in some interview where he said that he doesn't do shows on college campuses anymore because he can't say anything. Like there's no, whatever he says, people are going to object to because I don't know if he's just a dinosaur and hasn't found out what's funny with these newer kinds of rules that we have.
Yeah.
Or if people are overreacting to things that they shouldn't be overreacting to.
Yeah.
I tend to side on the side of the people who are saying, hey, quit being a jerk.
Yeah.
quit saying things that make me feel bad about myself.
Yeah.
And Mr. Guy, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
I'm with you there. But Chris Rock, really? I mean, he's not.
Yeah.
He's, okay. I don't know. I listen to a lot of different comedians sometimes. I really like Jim Gaffigan. I think that his humor is universal.
Oh, that guy's great. Yeah.
I think that his humor is universal. It's not offensive, and yeah, it's really well done and clean. And his stories and anecdotes and observations are just hilarious. And to bring
you
it back,
I think,
bring
I think
it,
you're
to,
right.
To bring it back to our original subject of comedy and video games, stuff like that really can't be written into a video game. That is someone's perspective. You have to have like his perspective, and you can't really translate that or communicate that to your audience via a video game.
Think about GTA. I mean, GTA does that. Like the newest GTA has a lot of things in it that are of a certain perspective, and it's so outrageous, and the idea is that it's so envelope pushing and outrageous and offensive and whatever. But I don't know about you, but I played that game, and while I appreciated it and I liked it as a game, I thought the humor was really outdated. I was like, wow, this stuff maybe 10 years ago would have passed, but right now it just seems like this old tired kind of style of talking about the world and thinking about the world that just doesn't really have a place anymore. And it's weird that a GTA game from Rockstar, who have always been so cutting edge, would all of a sudden seem like I don't know, something
out of date.
Something out of date. Yeah. Like played out, tired. You
yeah.
know?
GTA Weird, 5. Right? Yeah. GTA 5 had a lot of social commentary, but it just didn't seem to fit anymore. It just seemed to be that it was offensive for the sake of being offensive. And that was their joke.
Yeah. And that's not funny anymore.
No.
There was a time that was funny, but now it isn't. And it's weird. I don't know what changed, but
it's
something has changed.
It's distasteful. And again, this kind of brings us back to like the topic of censorship. Like, should they continue doing that? But at the same time, like, it's not really censorship and minding your business. It's more like, is it relevant? Will it still have that same impact because you are selling a product and you want it to have a quality impact on your audience?
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know that it's necessarily a matter of censorship. I mean, if anything, we learned from the internet is that, you know, nothing is going to be censored.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if they haven't shut the internet down yet, they're not going to shut it down.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
Like, there's the worst of the worst in the history of humanity. You could spend all day watching, and some people do.
Yeah.
So they're not going to shut it down. So censorship, I don't really think is an issue, but it's more like about taste.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like there was a time when there were social mores in the world that people, like comedians, would like puncture the social mores and it was revolutionary and it was exciting because of that. But now that there are no mores and everybody's just in this sort of postmodern, landscape, there's no mores to really puncture anymore. And when people do, it's like, why would you be puncturing this thing that we're trying so hard to have? Like, we're trying so hard to build some way that people can relate to each other.
Yeah.
Like, why would people think it's a good idea to try and stop that? To be like, oh, well, yeah, social mores say we shouldn't use the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who think it's funny or revolutionary somehow to use that word. And you just want to go, no, this isn't some imposed cultural norm that no longer applies. This is literally the people who are saying, this hurts me when you do it.
Yeah.
Saying, please don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm getting on my social justice bandwagon right about now, huh?
That's okay. But like at the same time, it doesn't matter what you do. There will always be someone that finds it offensive. There'll always be someone who, you know, disagrees. There'll always be someone who will be the opposite of what you are. And
yeah, you know what? And maybe there should be. You know, like, maybe that's good. Maybe that means you're doing something right. If somebody's offended by what you do and say, that probably means you're doing something right.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody heard, like, I know that there are many people on the internet who, if they had heard the speech that I just gave about the N-word, would be very, very offended at the idea that there should be any sort of thought about not saying certain words if you're a certain race, you know?
Like, yes.
Because, like, I as a white guy, I don't tell other races how they should feel and what they can and can't say.
Right.
I'm only talking to white people, mm-hmm. and I say only to white people, don't use the N-word because it's really messed up.
Yeah, it totally is.
You know,
yeah,
don't do it.
No, and you know, people can bring up very valid arguments to their side, and you know, they could probably make a very valid point. But at the same time, you know,
we gotta have somebody like that on the show. Let's find some right wing person who wants to talk to us. If anybody hears this and they're like a super right wing person that wants to take the opposite side, I would love to have a talk, and it will be totally respectful and awesomely interesting to get that other perspective.
Yeah,
although it would probably make me really angry.
Yeah, but we'll have to keep our cool.
Because you know us liberals out here in Hollywood, all we ever do is get angry when anybody has different opinions than us.
I think that's just a natural reaction. You know, it's like I don't know.
I don't know. We're for a show about comedy. We are certainly on some serious topics this week, Scott.
Certainly are.
You know why I think we're on these serious topics?
Why is that?
Because we've been playing so much video games that our cognitive abilities have been enhanced so much. That's what I think's going
on. We're more aware. Yeah,
dude, I play video games. Like, soon I'm gonna be a hyper genius. I play so much video games.
Totally.
My cognitive abilities are gonna be like, I'm gonna be like moving objects with my mind.
Yeah. Wow.
You know what? That's what I want. I want to know how video games affect our telekinetic abilities.
Yeah, get on it, science.
Hey, science, study whether video games can make me more telekinetic than I already am,
because
I already can shoot mind bullets. That's a lie.
And kill a yak 300 exactly. yards away.
Oh, yeah. What was that from? Tenacious D, right?
Yep. Anyhow. So
there we go. Speaking of Tenacious D, we come back once again to Double Fine and the fantastic Jack Black, who starred in Brutal Legend. Oh my God, it's a segue.
Yeah, wow.
No, wait, that's a callback.
That is.
Speaking of comedy terms.
Yeah. Did you play Brutal Legend?
I did. I played it a little bit. I did not finish it. The actual gameplay is not my style. That like RTS thing is not.
I thought it was interesting.
Really, what I dig.
I thought it was interesting, but I really like that game more for its aesthetic and soundtrack than I did its comedy.
Oh, the soundtrack was incredible.
Yeah, right.
Like that was the soundtrack of Tim Schafer's life.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like that was his favorite thing. Was like, what awesome metal am I going to put on this game? What awesome metal is over the top enough to go in this game?
Yeah. And it was perfect. Tim Schafer, the creator, or rather the president and CEO of Double Fine, is a really cool guy, and I would love to hang out with him. He totally has like great taste in music, and I'm sure that like he penned 90% of that soundtrack. It's like, we're gonna have this song, we're gonna have this song, we're gonna have this song, and that was really well made in how it, you know, how it was implemented into each sort of area of the game that you encountered. And it was a really cool game. The humor of it was still there because Jack Black is just a genius when it comes to comedy.
Right, he's a funny guy.
He's a really funny guy. So is Tim Schafer and the rest of the writing crew at Double Fine. And I don't know, like, I remember that game more for like it being metal than anything else. There was
very metal.
Very metal. But like Psychonauts, another game by Double Fine, which was shamefully overlooked. That game was
at the time, yeah, but now it's regarded as a classic.
Yeah, now it is, and for good reason. Like it does comedy in the game very well.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm, and
you know what? If you want to talk Tim Schafer and comedy, we're gonna go really far back. Monkey Island.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's right? That's one of his original ones, and I never played that one.
It's good. It's worth it. It holds up. Like, I think you'd like it if you played it now.
Okay.
I mean, it's a little, you know, it's old school, but it's good.
I think Telltale might have made a remake of that, and I might have that game, so I'll have to check that out. Yeah, like, Psychonauts, I remember, like, laughing out loud all the time. Because, like, the script and, like, sort of the environments that you visit are just wacky and funny. And, you know, I remember laughing out loud quite a lot because of the characters and the gameplay itself with all the telekinetic powers and the silly things that you could do with that. That was just a really well-made and really funny game. Because the concept of it was like, you visit people's psyche and you could see inside their heads, and each one had a very different aesthetic and feel and design to it that made it interesting.
Yeah, that game had a very rich idea to work with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like that's a more promising premise than Brutal Legends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. So, comedy games, Fallout 4, enhancing our cognitive abilities.
Yeah.
Have I left anything out?
Nope. I think that...
Social justice issues.
Social justice issues. censorship.
Censorship.
Yeah.
The First Amendment.
Yeah, we had some real talk on this comedic episode. I know.
We really got down deep with the issue, Scott.
Yeah, we did. Totally.
We had
did.
A rap session, man.
Yeah, we did, man. Totally did. We didn't. We apologize for that comment.
We didn't at all. I apologize for this entire episode.
Oh,
of
no,
the
don't do that. We had some good conversation here.
We had some good times together today.
I ranted. I think this is the episode where I first ranted. It only took me 11 episodes, but hey,
I know, right?
You were
on fire.
I went on an angry gaming nerd rant. Wow.
I was scared for a little bit.
Well, I'm upset about certain things. I get upset about things sometimes.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So episode 11, the episode where Scott gets angry.
Yes, we will call it the anger episode.
Anger management.
Scott gets... Yes, okay. So there we go.
All right.
Also, the Periscope episode. Hi to the one person who's still around on the Periscope.
Glad you're here.
We love you, one person. All right. So... Until next week, I am Steve Johnson.
And I am Scott Pell.
And this is Old Geek, Young Geek. Bye, Internet.
Bye, Internet.
And if you like today's podcast, let us know. Send us a tweet at Old Geek Young Geek on Twitter, or send us an email at oldgeekyounggeek@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
I'm back, I'm back, I'm cool when Cyrus in a tear. On me, no ghost, no 16-bit like Sega Genesis. RG ball on the board, soundtrack on the track, Gemini on the job, Shelly G on the G, set green for the green free chiller, and I'm back on my thing for the listeners. What?